This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. The interest people have in Stephon Gilmore? Yeah. Keep KJ, don't sign Gilmore. That comes from the 360. Trade for him and have a play to prove it deal. And if he proves he's better than last year, then maybe look at resigning him. That comes from the 208. We'll ask Brock what he thinks about that. We've got a lot to ask Brock here. Brock Huer joins us for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Now here's your host, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42.
Good morning, Brock. How are you now?
Oh, good morning, Polly. Doing great. Had a wonderful weekend. Drove our Haley out to Missoula, Montana. Ooh. To begin her journey
up,
there.
She grows up so fast.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah,
isn't
it
that
is.
Wild? That joyous little girl, that bubbly, fun, joyous little girl. She's still all of that. I will say, we pulled into Missoula. We were a little early to meet the coaches for the tour and everything else. So we ate at this little barbecue spot, which I think happened to be maybe closest to Hippieville in Missoula. And we're eating ribs. And Haley's like, I could just read her face like a book. She's like, where am I? What is going on right here? What is happening? Do I really want to grow up and be on my own? And, oh gosh, it was such a fun little moment, fun little laugh. And the minute she met her coaches and her teammates and we had dinner with her teammates, what a blast. Kind of fun to see her spread her wings, Danny. That's what they do, Paul. They grow up and then they move on and they journey on, and can't wait to watch her at Montana.
That's very cool and very happy for you, Brock, and the fam. Question number one. So since we last spoke, Russell Wilson had a press conference. What's your reaction to Russ's press conference? The first time we've heard from Russ in great detail after a very dramatic offseason.
Your agent and your team around you work for you. You can't say, I didn't do this and I never wanted that. It just doesn't work that way. You pay your agent. You pay him a lot of money. None of those decisions were off Russell's radar. If they were, he would have said so at that time and at that moment, and he could have put a halt to all of that this offseason. He did not. He protected his interests. You know, he said, hey, he felt like the narrative was going a certain direction, and he wanted to stop it, and so he played his cards. And as I said, I think it will be a healthy environment. I really do. I think it will be a healthy situation. I think there's enough equity between the sides, enough relationship of a decade between the sides. But I certainly wasn't buying I never requested a trade. I never really wanted to do that. I never wanted that direction. I want to be Seahawk for life. It's a year-by-year relationship. And I think, as we move forward, that's exactly how it's going to play out year by year.
He was very stung by the perception that he had asked for a trade. I think we knew that the day that Adam Schefter reported that these are the four teams he would accept a trade to, because there was immediately a clarification, right? There was immediately a clarification. Now, on the one hand, the source was identified. It was Mark Rogers. Rogers told Schefter that. The second part, immediately afterwards, there was Russell Wilson is not seeking a trade. He's merely saying, if you're going to trade me, here's the four places that I would accept a trade to if you want to trade me.
Right.
That was, to me, an encouraging sign in the long term for Seattle and Russ, that Russ is very sensitive to the perception that he was the one precipitating the desire to get out.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And he he knows how to play the game.
Yep.
He a decade in, he knows how to play the game. He knows how to play the game on the field. I think he knows how to play the game off the field. I don't think he and his team anticipated, and we talked about this for the last 3, 4, 5 months, I don't think they anticipated the kind of backlash, the kind of roar, the kind of curating pain that move to Adam Schefter felt and resonated, and he wanted to back away and spin away and run away from it like Russell can certainly do on the field.
Question two. We got some discontent in New England, Brock. Stephon Gilmore not showing up for their mandatory minicamp. He wasn't there today. Belichick said him and a ha, guys might not be here, his travel. And then Mike Garofalo from the NFL Network said, no, he's not coming for the 3 days. He's a former defensive player of the year. He's scheduled to make $7 million. Would you be interested in acquiring said player?
Yes. Yeah. I think he would be my top priority. The defense alignment, okay, around cut time or even as you get into training camp, there's still some names out there, right? Geno Atkins' name is still out there. I think he's just so physically beat up that the whole entire market has said thanks, but no thanks. Or, you know, he wants a price tag that is totally unreasonable right now for as much production as he's had in the past. There's other defensive line names that are intriguing because of past production, but as far as future production, you know, even Hicks out of Chicago, I know is a name that Jake Heaps has floated and liked and was certainly part of that rumored trade possibility to Seattle with Fuller and everything else. Fine, that's okay. But as far as playing the teams you're going to play in your division, playing the 49ers, playing the Cardinals, playing the Rams, would I love a bona fide lockdown, one-on-one, take you out of the game kind of corner who I think can still play at a very high level? Yes. And for some reason, when this name kind of percolated a month ago, Danny, the name that came right alongside to me was Justin Coleman. One of the rare DBs from outside the Seahawks family that came in here and thrived, right? Had spent time in other places and in particular had spent time in New England, in Belichick's scheme, understanding nuance, understanding technique, understanding route combinations, you know, the depth that they go to in New England to train up their defensive backs. And to watch that work so successfully for Justin here in Seattle, I think, right or wrong, biased or unbiased, that name popped into my head with the Stephon Gilmore and why that move would excite me even more.
If they traded for him, and it's only a rental, it's only 1 year, because there's 1 year left on his contract, is that okay? Is it okay if they were to get him but only have him for the one season? Because it would likely, I would imagine, cost at least a second-round pick to get him.
Yeah, I think so. And you have an incredibly expanded cap space after this season. DJ Reed is on the final year of his deal as well. Was Witherspoon a one-year or two-year deal?
I believe that's a one-year deal. $4 million.
I believe that's a one-year deal as well. So you've got a couple guys on one-year deals. Bring in the next guy on a one-year deal and see who sticks. You know, see who plays at a level to garner and earn that next, you know, big contract and significant contract that all of those guys would certainly be hunting for. So Daniel Jeremiah said it's the last dance, man. You go for Julio Jones, you are swinging for the fences for a couple years. You give up that second round pick, you basically have no draft capital next year in that draft. But you have a Stephon Gilmore that, to me, would solidify that back end an awful, awful lot.
Question number three. Tomorrow, Seahawks minicamp begins. We're not 100% sure what's going to take place as regards to Jamal Adams and his attendance.
He's not shown up yet, right? We have not heard a whisper yet.
We have not seen evidence. We've seen neither hide nor hair. We can't say definitively he hasn't been there, but no, we haven't seen any evidence.
Has Pete even addressed the situation with his multiple injuries, both shoulders, thumb? Have they even talked about the surgeries and the rehab and any of that?
Publicly, injury, I cannot remember him discussing that. Do you expect Adams to be there tomorrow?
I do, for what it's worth. Yes, I do. I do.
I think he's going to be there and not practice.
Oh, 100%. He couldn't practice anyway, I think, with his rehab and his shoulders. And, you know, it's just it's so intriguing. Yes, I do expect him to be there. I don't think he wants to be fined, whatever it is. It's a pretty significant fine over those 3 days. Yeah. I don't think you want to totally scorch earth as far as negotiations go, because I think if you make that card and play that move, that's why I hesitated, was, okay, I play that move. What is that going to do to Matt Thomas and John Schneider and those guys negotiating behind the scenes? It's just going to further entrench them that this is the deal and we're not moving at all. And if you don't want to show good faith by even being here, then you've got no shot in moving the dial or winning on any minor detail that you may be squabbling over right now. So, yeah, I do expect him to show. I would not expect him on the field at all. And I am deeply curious as far as the timing. What are we now, mid-June? Mm-hmm. What is the possibility of him practicing in 6 weeks, 7 weeks when training camp begins? Where is he in his rehab? Who did his surgeries? How has that process evolved? He talked about getting both shoulders done. Wasn't just the one shoulder, needing repairs on both of those and his finger and everything else. So where is he? What kind of guy are we getting in 33? And how soon can we see him on a football field? I hope those questions are posed, and more importantly, I hope they're answered.
I'm not a doctor, Brock, but I'm going to bet, without even having seen the patient, I think his practice availability may depend in part on the whether or not that extension is done. Call me crazy, but I think if that extension's done, he might be a little more willing to practice when training camp opens.
Yeah, I think, Danny, that's usually how it works. I think even with number 54, who negotiated his own deal.
Right? Yes, that's true.
We saw him wear his jersey inside out until he got his deal done. And, yeah, he was out there, but he was not practicing. And it's a pretty significant injury for a very violent physical football player. We watched firsthand what injury did to Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. We watched it. We saw the significance of it. As Cam, unfortunately, and that body broke down, he had to retire very, very early. A career cut very, very short. Kenny Easley, in much the same vein, a different medical deal. Earl Thomas, right, the tearing of that shoulder was really the beginning of the end, unfortunately, in Seattle, and ultimately implodes and explodes in Baltimore. When you are a violent safety, asked to be in the kind of collisions that Jamal is asked to be in, and by the way, wants to be in, that's where he thrives. That body is going to get beat up. The fact that he's torn labrums in both shoulders, that's a legitimate concern. Is that playing a role in this contract conversation? I'm totally speculating, but I think it would. I mean, how long in guarantees? You're not going to go in guarantees beyond 2 years, are you?
No, but it also works. Wouldn't that make Jamal more willing to take an extension? Because in the overall, like, he's got the uncertainty of how he's going to come back from these injuries as well, right?
Yes.
Playing another season on that and saying, okay, I'm gonna bet on myself here is complicated a little
bit. He's not going to do that. There's no chance he's going to do that, and I don't think the Seahawks want to do that either. I think they want to structure this deal, and I don't know how much Mr. Clayton, who works and knows these agents and these numbers as well as anybody, and you guys have squabbled and quarreled over this, but my gut feeling is he is not comfortable doing the deal the Seahawks way. Which is, you're going to get your guarantees, you're going to get paid very highly, but it's going to be an extension off of this next year's salary. That's the way it works. That's the way it's worked for 12 years with this leadership. And I don't think that's what he's most excited about. I think he wants his lump sum, and he wants all his guarantee now, and that's just not contractually, structurally, the way the Seahawks have done it with anybody.
I think the biggest issue is going to be how much does he want to be the highest paid safety? I think that's going to be the sticking point. The other part of it that they'll say, and Seattle's done this, is their extensions tend to be a year shorter than most other teams do. They tend to be a year shorter, and that's something that they hold out as, hey, you're going to get back, you're going to get another bite at the apple sooner. Like, you're going to,
and he's going to say, and his agent's going to say, and his brother's going to say, and his family's going to say, hey man, you are already, taking a beating in this league. It's more important now to get that extra year and get as much guarantees as possible now than it is another bite at the apple. Another bite at the apple for a running back and a safety in this league is not another bite at the apple for a quarterback and a wide receiver and even a pass rusher or left tackle in this league today.
That is Blue 42. Brock Huard, our guest on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Hey, Brock, what did you think of how the Green Bay Packers president, CEO Mark Murphy, handled that? He really tamped down the temperature on their problem with their quarterback, didn't he?
No, he didn't.
He's a complicated fellow. Oh, you don't think that Aaron enjoyed that?
No.
You don't think that he thought, oh, he's complimenting me. He's saying that I've got some intellectual depth, that I have layers like an onion.
What kind of smirk did Rodgers have as he read the headlines about how good Jordan Love looked? What kind of little smirky smirk on the Berkeley boy's face did he have when Jordan Love was sizzling hot, when Jordan looked so good out there? What kind of smirk you think Aaron had? What kind of sip of wine you think he took? What kind of cliff jump did he take in Hawaii or wherever he is right now when he read that headline and those news?
I imagine him as having a series of pictures that he's defacing. Gutekunst has devil horns, mustache, black eye, all sorts of stuff. Now Mark Murphy. Now it's your turn. You just made the list, Mark Murphy.
Dartboard.
And he's going to go to work on that photo as well. Perhaps some darts will be flung at it.
Aaron Rodgers is not going to play another down with the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, really?
Oh, come on. It's, what are we, June 14th? He's not playing another down in Green Bay, right?
Where is he going to play?
He'll play in Denver.
Denver?
Yeah, he'll play. I think this would be the
That's
most
a proclamation. That's a proclamation point that was just made.
He's not
here
playing, yeah.
June 14th at 11:15 a.m. At 8:15 a.m. Pacific, 11:15 Eastern, Brock Huard has said he's not playing again for the Green Bay Packers.
Not playing again. Not playing another down. And may just not play. If it's not Denver and then this game of chicken and Green Bay really wants to play that card in a complicated situation, Aaron Rodgers made enough money. Aaron Rodgers knows he can play after this season or whatever. Aaron Rodgers, I've said this to you guys how many times, holds a grudge against his mother. You don't think he's going to have a problem with Gutekunst and Mr. Complication Murphy? Of course he will.
He's a complicated fella.
Yes,
he is a complicated fella.
All right, can't wait to talk. Mini camp tomorrow. Let's go, boys.
That is Brock Huard. We will talk to him tomorrow for Blue 42. Do you buy that? I ask you, is he going to play? Is he going to suit up and play for the Green Bay Packers again, Paul? Yes, no.
I think he will. I mean, is he going to sit out multiple games? Is he willing to sit out games?
At age 38, right?
He keeps on, well, I guess he didn't keep on, but in that conversation that he had with Kenny Mayne, he does this speech where he talks about the people and how the people are what makes an organization important. Is he going to be so spiteful towards one or two people at the expense of the rest of a locker room, organization, many
of... He doesn't talk to his own family, Paul.
Yes, I know that, Maura. Is he someone that is willing to go out on a limb, though, publicly, say those things only to have it all perhaps attacked afterwards? I don't know about that.
I don't know if he needs to say anything. I think the question is he willing to be hated?
Right. That's sort of where I'm going with here.
Right.
And I don't...
Like, do you have it in you to be hated? Because when it comes down to it, most every player will find this out, that if you've got a good team and you hold out or you demand a trade, in almost every situation, you get reviled. It can be a little different when the team's bad. When the team's bad with a great player, you get cut some slack, right? And you end up asking out people to look at it. Griffey's one of the only guys that I can remember. I don't know if I have another example of a good team where a great player asked out and the city did not hate him.
Yeah, I can't think of one off the top of my head either, because usually when that happens, we're talking about athletes who are past their prime. If it is a favorable farewell, say someone like, in hockey, Ray Bourque got traded to the Colorado Avalanche when the Bruins weren't good, and then he ends up winning with the Avalanche that year. So I would say for this situation right now, I don't know that Aaron Rodgers is willing to be disliked. If he was, wouldn't he have publicly said, I want out? Wouldn't he have just done that? I mean, take a look at what we saw in basketball. It's a little different, but I mean, James Harden didn't seem to care very much about being disliked in Houston to get his way out of town and eventually get to Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's true, but he hasn't had to say it, right? Everybody knows it. Like, there's no uncertainty about where Rodgers is. He just hasn't come out and said it as directly. I mean, take a look at what happened with Russell Wilson too. He didn't have to say anything directly. Like, you don't have to say it directly to make it clear what you want. And really, I think you're right. He's going to have to miss games to get his way out. I don't think he's going to be able to. I don't think he's going to be able to. He won't be traded before he shows he's going to miss games.
Right. He's had a lot of support publicly, too, through all of this. And I do think that if he were to
from
be
his teammates?
Shipped, no, I think publicly. I think for the most part, who's been critical of Aaron Rodgers? I have, because I think that situation's good. But who has really been critical of Aaron Rodgers from a national perspective?
And I think doesn't matter, though. It's Green Bay Packer fans, right? Like, do you think he really cares about the national chattering class of talking heads? I think he cares. I think what would hurt most is if Packer fans turned on him. That's what I think hurt Russell most, is that people, Seattle fans, thought he wanted to be traded. And that's why that was his top objective last week, was to say, I didn't ask to be traded.
Well, I guess the difference is people turned on Russ. I don't think people have locally turned necessarily on Aaron Rodgers. I think people in Green Bay probably look at the situation for what it is and say, man, it seems like there's a pretty easy fix here. It's moving on from Brian Gutekunst or moving on from Jordan Love. And that hasn't happened to this point.
Yeah, I'd be really curious if you get down to what the poll would be among Packer fans of which they side with. Is Aaron right and they want him to get his way and stay? Or if they're mad about what Aaron's doing and feeling like, hey, he's drawn a line in the sand over a pretty good situation. Because usually in these situations, the fans end up siding with the team. You can talk about like who's right and who's wrong all you want and why all of the objections might be valid. But when it comes down to it, usually the fans side with the team.
They've had two quarterbacks since 1992. They should know that they have only been relevant after a pretty long stretch of irrelevance that the Packers had after the Vince Lombardi days, because they've had these back-to-back quarterbacks. So I think they're smart enough to know that without Aaron Rodgers, this thing is probably going to go fall back to some Stone Age times, and that they want him here. So they're siding with him. They're hoping that it all works out naturally, and I don't think it's going to.
I believe Rob Domofsky of ESPN said that they are starting to turn on him.
Oh, okay.
The sentiment is getting more annoyed.
Let's turn the page to a more happy, complacent, exciting quarterback situation. Russell Wilson, in talking about Shane Waldron's offense, said something that caught Paul's ear. Here was Seattle's quarterback in a non- hey, my situation with Seattle. He actually talked some football on Thursday. Here's that cut.
Shane brings a great versatility. Something that I, you know, love about him is that, you know, he really understands the game in all aspects of it. Situationally, he's been a lot of different places. He's been at successful places. I think this thing's about to follow me back here. A little windy, but I think that, you know, Shane, I think that he also, you know, being at the Rams, being at the Redskins, being at the Patriots, he comes from great perspective. You know, and we've spent a lot of time together talking ball, spending a lot of time. He loves ball, so you know, that's what I love about it. So I'm excited about the opportunity.
There's something there that caught Paul's ear. We'll find out what that is coming up next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
All right, Paul. We heard Russ likes Shane Waldron because Waldron likes ball. That piqued your interest. Why?
It wasn't just that part. There's a word that he said along the way. I loved hearing that word, perspective. He talks about how Shane Waldron's been a part of a couple of different offenses, not just L.A., but Washington and New England. And when I hear that, I feel like Russ maybe isn't 100% buying into Shane Waldron. And honestly, why should he? Because it's a first-time offensive coordinator. But I do think that there is some cautious optimism that Russ has and some real legitimate curiosity as far as what Waldron maybe can bring that Schottenheimer wasn't. And they've talked about tempo a whole lot over the last couple of days, too. And I know that Jake Heaps, in his observations at OTA, said that he saw a lot of tempo there. That's an off-season thing that you hear a whole lot of. But I feel that Russell Wilson is, for now, buying into Shane Waldron. And that's good, because that was not necessarily a guarantee.
Yeah, I think that's a good sign. I think it is a good sign. I will officially raise my hand, though, and say that I've stopped learning anything from the interviews we have with players when they talk about it. I think we've entered the realm of puffery. I think we've entered the realm of puffery where everybody's going to say what they hope is true as opposed to being an actual forecast or specific observation. And that's not a criticism of Russ. I think everybody does this, but everything's going to sound great. And I don't know if anything that we're hearing from now until the start of the regular season is actually going to be sort of a critical observation,
yeah,
or prediction.
You're probably right. Could you envision Russell Wilson in a moment not buying into the puff, not fluffing the puffery?
Yeah, off-season Russ. But off-season Russ is gone. Like, off-season Russ, we haven't seen off-season Russ for a couple months.
You're very
now,
excited,
right,
about the return of regular season Russ. It's June and he's back.
Right. This is a band that can take the most pointed question and sand the edge right off of that thing and give you a 53 and one-third yard wide and laser focus and cliche it right into oblivion. I think all the signs are good. The fact that Pete went completely outside of his sort of coaching tree or guys, he did not hire a friend of Pete, right? He didn't hire a coach that he'd worked with before. He didn't hire a coach that really had much overlap with guys he's worked with.
Right.
I think that's a positive sign for it being something different. Because if there was tension between Russ and Pete over the direction of the offense, and Pete had gone and signed a guy that he knew, if he'd gone and signed Anthony Lynn or gone and signed somebody to be his offensive coordinator that he knew what to expect, I would say like Russ might come out and he really might feel stifled by this.
Yeah. And while there is a little uncertainty as far as whether or not Waldron can actually make this thing happen, I feel that the different direction they're going in is definitely encouraging.
It is Danny and Gallant. We will get back to a little bit of the football conversation. There's a cornerback, not a quarterback, a cornerback that might be available because Stephon Gilmore did not show up at New England's minicamp that started today. But over the weekend, we said there were three parts to the Mariners' three-game series in Cleveland. There was the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there was plenty of good. Not all of it in Seattle or for Seattle. We'll explain why as we start out here. Again, we defer to the Danish National Orchestra for their rendition of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Thank you very much, Denmark, for your services.
Do you want a little bit of good news about Jared Kelnick?
Give it to me.
All right, here it is. We're bringing it back. Let's dust off what did Jared do because he's back in the minor leagues.
What did Jared do?
Well, he didn't do anything yesterday because the game got rained out, right?
Yeah.
On Saturday, he homered, though. And he had a couple hits on Friday. What, he was 3-for-8 over the weekend?
Huzzah! Because he was, what, 0-for-8 with 4 strikeouts to begin his return to Tacoma?
That's right. And if you glue that on to the end of his major league run, he'd, what was it, 46 straight at-bats without a hit?
Yeah, that was not good.
But 46 straight at-bats? Yeah, it's over.
He's back.
The Schneid. He's off the Schneid. The Schneid is... Although, what's difficult is when he returns to the major leagues, he's still going to have that skid, right? He's still got to pull out of that skid before he gets to the Chris Davis history-making mark, which I think is 56 at-bats? Might be 54. It's somewhere in the mid-50s consecutive at-bats without a hit.
It's a shame nothing can be done about that skid. It's just lingering.
The other part, Evan White, who we told you on Friday had missed. He'd been scratched from the lineup the previous day. He was back in the lineup. He wasn't playing first base. I think he was the DH. But also, he clobbered a home run as well.
Yes, he did. Huzzah, they're back. The bats are back. The young boys are going to be coming up. And all that we thought that was so concerning with those two, it's going to be fine, Danny.
So that is the good. Other things that were bad over the weekend... Other things that were awful is the bottom of your lineup continues to struggle, right?
Yeah.
Like you're still having a hard time getting production. If your top hitters, if Haniger, who might now be hurt, and Seager, and Ty France, who's cooled off a little bit, and now Jake Fraley, if those guys, if your top five hitters aren't doing much, you're not getting much help from the length of this lineup.
No, you're not. And I mean, give them credit for what they were able to do on Saturday and that getting 8 hits. I'm almost surprised whenever I see this team get more than 5, and that they were able to do it again, too, on Sunday, where they really smacked the ball around. But you're right, man. The bottom of this lineup, on a day-to-day basis, it's practically punting at times, and you're only going to be able to win so many games when that's the case.
What was the best thing or the thing that you liked most over the course of the weekend?
Logan Gilbert yesterday, Danny. He seems to be getting better with every single start. He looks very just in command up there. I think it has to do with his height a little bit. But yesterday, starts off the game great. He has, I think, delivered in the ways that we were hoping that Jared Kelnick would when he first came up. I think he's been really impressive to this point.
What I was surprised at is I thought he was going to be better out of the gate, and instead he's getting better over the course of his time up here.
Yeah.
I felt, especially with how tall he was, I was like, guys are going to have a hard time adjusting to where the ball comes out. I thought he was going to be better from the jump than he was. And his first few starts, underwhelming, I don't know that that's fair to say, because it's not like he was getting tagged. When he got hit hard, and he was giving up home runs. But the fact that he seems to be getting better as he goes through, A, I think he's gaining confidence in his off-speed stuff, and B, I think it shows that he is someone who takes preparation. He's not just getting by on arm talent.
Nope.
He's not getting by. Like, he works with scouting reports. Like, he is very much someone who is learning about approach at the big league level as well.
Yes, he is. And, you know, that's not easy. Generally, right out of the chute, you will have a lot of growing pains, and we have seen them. I mean, last year in particular, we sure saw a lot of them from Justin Dunn, and while Justice Sheffield was able to work through some of them, he has been consistent. You don't expect a young pitcher to be this consistent in his first couple of starts. Hopefully he keeps it up. I do imagine at some point, Danny, they're going to catch up to him, right? He'll probably have a rough stretch where it's a couple of starts in a row where we're seeing bad performances. But
I hope not. I hope what happens is he starts really locating his off-speed stuff and starts incorporating his changeup more. The Mariners love his changeup. He has not thrown it that much. Usually that means that that's a pitcher that doesn't have confidence in the pitch either to locate it or to be able to disguise that guys can pick up and tee off on it. I'm hoping that his full repertoire starts to even out any sort of adjustment or learning that the league does against him. The ugly continues to be the bullpen, or not continues, because the bullpen's been better for the most part.
It's one guy.
What do you do? Rafael Montero is running with scissors is, when you bring him into the game, it really is a coin flip situation at this point. He has 7 saves and he has 7 blown saves. I don't blame Scott Service for any of this. Scott Service is using the arms he has. And that was, they invested, they paid, they hired him. And if he's not able to do it, that's, well, it's a reflection of the uncertainty or the inconsistency of bullpen pitchers. But it's also, I don't know what else Scott is supposed to do. You move Graveman back into the closer role, or have him in the closer role to keep Montero out there. But Keenan Middleton is someone that you tried. He's not been the same since he got hurt. He's been demoted to AAA. I know people were howling about Scott Service bringing him into the game. I'm not sure what else Scott is supposed to do. I legitimately don't know what else he can do.
Isn't it time to put Montero in different situations, in a different role? Demote him essentially to maybe middle relief?
Who's better than him?
If you're that inconsistent, you have to say everyone. If you're that, if it's 50-50.
I don't know if that's true. A Graveman definitely is better, but I don't know if that's true. I don't know if they have better relievers in there. I think the issue there is how the bullpen is constituted and how they've gotten by so far. It is Danny and Gallant. Stephon Gilmore, he's not in New England. Could that end up with him coming to Seattle? We'll talk about that coming up next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Listen to this disc jockey's introduction. We heard a lot of Russell Wilson through other parties this offseason, whether it was through Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, who likely was talking with his agent, Mark Rogers, or Colin Cowherd, who was probably also talking with Russell Wilson's agent, Mark Rogers. Here is something Colin Cowherd had to say about the Seahawks-Russell Wilson situation in just February.
Russell Wilson, I can tell you this, isn't happy with Pete Carroll. He likes his teammates. He likes Seattle. It's a Pete Carroll thing. The offense is outdated. Analytic people for several years now have rolled their eyes at the Seahawks offense. That's not my opinion. I've had three different Seattle players tell me they feel like they're running a 1980s offense. Since the death of Paul Allen, Pete Carroll has unquestioned power. In my opinion, it's a lopsided franchise where the coach has too much power over the playbook, has too much power over his quarterback, has too much power over the franchise.
So, Danny, if Colin Cowherd is echoing the frustrations of Russell Wilson there, it sounds like there's not much that Russell Wilson's enthused about when it comes to Pete Carroll in Seattle. That's in February of this year.
Yeah, it's couching it as you've got the stodgy old coach who's standing in the way of contemporary greatness, right?
Right.
Like that's the storyline there. And since the death of Paul Allen, Pete's ego runs unchecked, or his say-so stands tallest of all.
things have changed. We've heard from Pete Carroll and John Schneider since then. We've also heard from Russell Wilson on Thursday. So Friday, right after that Russell Wilson press conference, here is now what Colin Cowherd is saying about the Seahawks and Russell Wilson situation.
You always hear the grass is greener. Sometimes it is, but he's got a well-financed team, a Hall of Fame coach, a coach that has been willing to shake things up all the time. Russell's aspirational. Pete Carroll's aspirational. This is not a tradition-heavy franchise like Pittsburgh or Green Bay. Pete and Russ actually fit really well together, and we have a history in the NFL where great defensive coaches and star quarterbacks from Dungy and Manning to Belichick and Brady to Tomlin and Big Ben, this Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, this is a good fit.
What's changed? So what possibly could explain that? Is it 180 degree take? It's pretty close. Like what possibly changed in the 5 months, 4 months since he said that?
Gabe Jackson, Dwayne Eskridge, Shane...
But it's not personnel, right? Like it's not personnel that he's pointing to. It's, hey, he's a Hall of Fame coach. They actually work really well together. It's entirely the framing, right? It's not the facts. Nothing factually changed. So either Colin has completely changed his thinking. Colin is getting dramatically different information that he's then laundering as his own observation. Or Colin rode a storyline that was much more compelling in February to say that the quarterback was unhappy and wanted out, and now that the quarterback's not going to be leaving, it's now better to say, okay, all that's over and the grass isn't always greener.
I think there are some degrees of three, but if it's that much of a change in tune, then there has to have been some sort of a conversation that has changed his mind. Because he's, Colin Cowherd, smart, critical. I don't think that he is going to do a complete 180 over nothing, right? You're making a face.
Well, that wouldn't be the craziest thing that I've ever heard. If you're a Seahawks fan, here's what you're hoping happened. That this truly reflects what Russell is feeling. And that Russell in February had wanderlust, and I don't know if it's going to work, and I'm frustrated being here. And now he looks at it and he says, I have gone on a exploration of the soul. I have explored the possibility of leaving here. And I've realized that I was rash. I was impetuous. The desire of youth for change is perhaps not as, I got a little ahead of myself. And it's actually pretty good here. If you're a Seahawks fan, that's what you want because that's what's best for the franchise, right?
Yeah. You want that. It's just, he's just putting this on as a poker face, right, Russell Wilson, in saying this through his emissaries, because this is just such a drastic shift, especially when we have both agreed that until the end of this season, you don't really know that you're out of the forest. You have to see an actual improvement this season.
Yeah. I tend to think that there's more to the friction than is being led on right now, that everybody's wallpapering over what happened. That's what I tend to believe. It is also possible, though, that Russ has come to a conclusion that his unhappiness was, if not unwarranted, entirely overblown, and he's much more content being here now.
Man, that's just...
Do you buy that?
That's hard to buy.
Does anybody else buy that?
That's hard to buy, right? I mean, all of a sudden, he is having this moment. This man, who we all know has ego, many quarterbacks do, is all of a sudden saying to himself, you know what? I had it all wrong. After, what, a couple of conversations privately? I feel like the damage control that's been done by all parties involved has been stupendous. But it's, for the most part, has to be just damage control. Nothing more than that. When nothing has legitimately changed in a way that really affects the foundation of the Seahawks teams. There's just a couple of new pieces aboard.
Well, but players change their minds over time. Like, that happens. teams change their minds too, right? Like guys reach new conclusions. Like that does happen. I don't want to dismiss the possibility.
180s, I believe, though, you know, isn't it a gradual change, not a complete reversal?
Have you ever thought about leaving or making a drastic switch and gone through that whole exploration and at the end decided that you don't want to make a change either in your personal life or your professional life? I think everybody's gone through that. And once you make that decision, you kind of do have a new clarity on what you were feeling before. And you can feel like, hey, I understand why I was frustrated. It was unwarranted. Look, my opinion is that Seattle's long-term relationship with their quarterback depends on the outcome of this season. And that at the very least, they need to get further in the playoffs than they have. They need to be better positioned. And my concern for the long-term viability is that raises an incredibly high bar to where you're at something like what the Green Bay Packers were. We're getting to the NFC Championship game. Still isn't enough. And after the end of the season, everything explodes into view. That's my feeling of where things are at. It's possible, though, that Russell went through sort of a dark night of the soul back in February and stared with the possibility of, do I really want to get traded? And Chicago is meeting with John Schneider in North Dakota. And, well, that meeting's kind of taking place because of the uncertainty that's around here. Like, it's possible that all of those things happen. I just don't think that's necessarily what went down.
He's Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. Have the Seahawks traded enough draft picks for veterans, or should they make a phone call about this very talented player who did not show up for his team's minicamp today? We'll tell you who that is next.